ね。
The Chafetz Chaim describes a fantastic party. You're surrounded by the most exotic gourmet foods. You're indulging in the finest of aged wines, while being serenaded by symphonies from a world-class orchestra. There's only one catch. This entire party is taking place. This entire party is taking place on a narrow ledge high above the city streets. And everyone at the party realizes that they're in danger. It wouldn't take much, a strong gust of wind, a building giving a little shake, a little misstep, and they will come crashing down to the streets below. Zok to Chafetz Chaim, we all indulge in these kind of parties. When times are good, when the economy is booming, when the money is flowing, people very often get a sense, they feel they deserve a break, they're able to indulge themselves, they're able to afford different luxuries, and they decide it's time to upgrade. A larger house, a nicer car, more exotic vacations. What people don't think about, and they don't consider, is that today's luxuries become tomorrow's necessities. And by raising your standard of living, by getting used to the finer things, you're putting yourself out on a narrow ledge. You're putting yourself in a position where you need more to survive. And if, as things tend to happen, the economy turns, parnassah is not quite as plentiful, the person will find himself in tremendous danger. He either needs to find the courage and the strength to be able to face the reality, to face his friends, to face his family, and to lower his standard of living, to adapt to the new reality. If he's unable to do so, he's going to be forced to cut corners, to start engaging in questionable business practices in a desperate attempt to maintain the facade. So, Zok to Chafetz Chaim, this is what leads people down the road of Geneva and Gezeila, Oishik and Sheker, and all Devarim HaAsurim. The fact that they're not aware and they raise their standard of living without considering the ultimate consequences. Now each period, each tkufa, has its own challenges, its own nisyonos, and its own shailos. A number of years ago, when I first got involved in the Beis Din, the most common shailos in Dinei Torah that came involved Bar Metzra and Ani Mahatik B'Charara. It was in the middle of a real estate boom, and whenever a property went up for sale, suddenly all the neighbors were fighting over it. They each wanted the right to buy it. A person would come to contract on a property, other people would try to put it in a higher offer and get the deal for themselves. A while back, there was a shift. Suddenly, people weren't fighting so eagerly over the deals, over the properties. And the shailos that started coming to us were more along the lines of Mechusar Amono, specific performance. People wanted to know when they can back out of contracts, when they can walk away from a deal, because suddenly it wasn't that exciting, it wasn't that lucrative. Today, the unfortunate reality is the most common issue we deal with is Gevias Choyv. An investment that sours, a loan that's in default, and people come to Beis Din trying to collect, trying to salvage whatever they can. So we'd like to spend this morning going through a number of the shailos that come up in an economy such as what we're facing today. Now I'd just like to begin with a disclaimer. Choshen Mishpat, when you're dealing with a monetary dispute, it's fundamentally different than any other area in halacha. If you have a question about kashrus, you have a question, will I eat in a certain establishment? That's a personal question. Each person speaks to his Meira Hira. He has his standards, he has his Mesira, and he makes a private decision. Will I eat there or will I not? When you're dealing with a financial dispute, there's always a second party. There's always another person you have to deal with. And you yourself, each person is a negiyah b'dav. He has negiyahs, he has a vested interest. And therefore, the halacha is clear. You do, neither party has the right to impose unilaterally their view on halacha. You may feel you're right. You may feel that you've heard a shear that backs your position. But ultimately, if you have a dispute with another party, it has to be taken to an impartial rav, a bez din, to resolve. You cannot make decisions on your own. Now, we have a number of different topics we're going to discuss today. They're really not directly connected. So in order to make it a bit easier, and because I don't want anyone to feel that I'm talking about them, we're going to discuss a hypothetical person and go through some of the events and the challenges that he faces. Our hero today goes by the name of Yossi the Plumber. Yossi is a typical middle-class American Jew. He owns a small establishment. He has two plumbers working for him. And Baruch Hashem, business has held up fairly well throughout the downturn. In fact, he relies primarily on a very large client who buys foreclosures and rehabs them. And Baruch Hashem, just the week before, that person had given him a tremendous job. So large, in fact, that Yossi decided to expand. He called another plumber, who he knew was out of looking for a job, and he verbally offered him a job and told him to start, you'll come in next week and you'll start on this new job. In addition, Yossi, the plumber, had just ordered a tremendous amount of supplies for this large job for this client. One day, Yossi comes into work, and he sees the secretary is shaken. He asks, what's going on? What's new? And he's informed that this big client has just declared Chapter 11. No more clients, no more job. So, the first thing Yossi realizes is that his big plans for expansion, this new employee that was supposed to start in a few days, this order of supplies, he's got to cancel it. He calls the supplier and says, I'd like to cancel the order. Now, the supplier, on the other hand, is not very excited. He had just gotten this huge order, business was down, and now Yossi the plumber is trying to cancel. So the question is, what are the rights, what are the obligations? In halacha, when we arrive at a deal, when I place an order, do I have the right to just change my mind? Do I have the right to just back out of the order? So this brings us to the concept of kinyonim and the concept of mechusar amonim. Let's say you're looking to buy a car. So you meet someone in shul, his car's for sale, you discuss the price, you go down to his house, you take a test drive, you handle a little bit here and there, since everyone's Jewish, and you arrive at a price, and you say, good, deal, $10,000, I'll buy the SUV. I don't have money on me today, I'll come back tomorrow, we'll do the deal tomorrow. You come back the next morning, and you notice in front of the house, where yesterday you had left the car, there's what seems to be a pancake. You knock on the door, and the fellow tells you that, oh yeah, last night an 18-wheeler was driving by, made a little bit of a wrong turn, and the car is flattened. But, a deal's a deal. Here's the title, I'd like the money. What's the halacha? Now, as from the laughter, as you all probably realize, you can back out. You may have had an agreement to purchase the car, but the car belonged to the seller. Until you've taken delivery, until a Maisa Kinyan was done, you've paid your title, Mashicha, Hagbah, Chazaka, each thing has its own Maisa Kinyan. Until a Kinyan is done, the item belongs to the seller, and any risk, any loss, is the seller's problem. Now, had the story been slightly different, had you arrived at the seller's house, paid the money, taken title to the car, and done an appropriate Kinyan, and
end, you make a l'chaim, and on your way out with the car keys, about to take it for your first drive, suddenly there's a crash, and it gets flattened then it's the buyer's risk. We look at the kinyan. We look at, again, there are different ma'aseh kinyanim, we're not going to go through each one, but we need some type of kinyan to change the possession from the buyer, from the seller to the buyer. Now, when we're going back to Yossi the plumber, Yossi had ordered the goods. Had the goods been delivered to Yossi's warehouse, and he took physical delivery, that clearly would be a kinyan. And the moment the kinyan was done, the deal is final, deal is finished, and neither party would have any right to back out, regardless of what happens afterwards. In our particular story, there was no delivery. There was just a verbal agreement. Was there a kinyan? No. Was there a contract? No. It was nothing more than a verbal agreement. In halacha, a verbal agreement is not binding, and either party does have the technical right to back out. Nevertheless, the Gemara tells us that if someone reaches an agreement, the deal is final, although it's verbal, although it's not binding, it cannot be enforced by a Beis Din. Nevertheless, a person that backs out is Ein Ruach Chacham Noicha Himenu, is doing the wrong thing. And the makar of this is either Himshochat Tzedek, or Sheiris Yisrael Lo Yasa Avlo. A Yid's word has to be his bond. He made a commitment to buy, he made a commitment to sell, he has a responsibility to follow through on this commitment and to go ahead with the deal. If he refuses to, we can't force him. There was no kinyan, there's no contract, but his personal responsibility is to follow through with the deal. Now there is a very important exception to this halacha. And that is, what happens to the following case? You go ahead, you reach a verbal agreement, you're going to buy this SUV. You agree on a price, $10,000, and you agree you're going to show up the next day with the money, and you're going to take possession of the car. That night, the price of gasoline doubles. You wake up the next morning, and you find out two things. First of all, you're not so sure you can afford the car. It's going to cost you a fortune to drive it around town. Second of all, because the cost of the gasoline doubled, the value of this SUV halved, because no one else wants to buy a car that's such a gas guzzler. Do you still have a responsibility to go through with the deal? In other words, there was a change in circumstances between the verbal agreement and the actual kinyan, the actual delivery. So this is a machlokes rishonim. Some rishonim take the position, it's too late. Just like, had you taken delivery of the car, and a week later the price of gas goes up, that's your problem. It's yours. So for a yid, once you made a commitment, once you gave your word, you should consider it as good as done. And therefore, although the market value may change, you still have a responsibility to go through with the deal. Again, if there's an oinus, if the car is destroyed, that would be treated differently in halacha. But the fact that the value of the car went down is not an excuse, according to these Rishonim. Other Rishonim argue, and they say, we're dealing here without a kinyan, without any halachically binding contract. There's nothing more than a verbal commitment. What was your commitment? Your commitment was, I'm going to pay you $10,000 for this car that's worth $10,000. You never made a commitment to pay $10,000 for a car that's worth $5,000. Therefore, if there's a material change in the circumstances, if the market value changes, that the commitment is not a strong commitment, there was never any smichas das, and according to some rishonim, you would have the right to back out, and there would be nothing wrong with it. Now, as a matter of halacha, the Mechaber in Siman Reish Dalet brings down the first opinion. He's machmir and says there's mechusar amono regardless of the circumstances. Therefore, if you're a Sfardi, and Sfardim generally follow the rulings of the Mechaber and the Rambam, you would have a commitment to go through with the deal regardless of the circumstances. And Ashkenazi has it a little bit easier. The Rambam brings down both the shitas, both the shitas that are machmer and the shitas that are mekel. And the Chassam Sofer and the Aruch HaShulchan both say that as a matter of halacha, we are mekel. And therefore, if there's a change in circumstance, you have the right to back out. The Aruch HaShulchan says, nevertheless, there is a midas chasidus to honor the deal, to go through with it. But it's not a chiyuv, it's not an isser to back out, and it would be up to the parties. So going back to our story with Yossi, because there is a material change in the circumstances, Yossi ordered the supplies with the knowledge and the expectation that he had this job. Now that he lost the client, now that he lost the job, he has no use for the supplies. So the halacha would be, at least for Ashkenazim, he would have the right to back out. He would be able to cancel the order. Now let's discuss the worker. Besides putting in an order for supplies, Yossi had also promised someone a job. How do we deal with an employment offer? Is that the same or is that different than ordering a bunch of pipes or supplies? So in halacha, when we're dealing with a worker, there's a tremendous kula and a tremendous chumra. We'll start with the chumra. What happens in the following scenario? You're looking to hire an accountant. A gentleman comes for a job interview. Very impressive. On the spot, you offer him a job, and he accepts, and you agree he's going to start next Monday. That night, you're in shul, you meet an old friend of yours, who mentions that he was recently laid off, he's looking for a job. It's an old friend, you feel bad for him. So, on the spot, you tell him, great, I'm so glad I bumped into you before Monday. I was about to hire someone, but he didn't start yet. You hire him, you call back the first gentleman, and you tell him I'm rescinding the job offer. Now, from what we know until now, the issue should be an issue of mechusar amana. It was just a verbal agreement, it was a verbal offer, no contract, no kinyan, he didn't start the job. So it should be subject to mechusar amana. However, that's not completely true. There's another factor we have to deal with. This accountant that came to you, you weren't his only job offer. He interviewed in three other places. And he had gotten another offer. Once you had offered him the job, it was the highest bid, he turned down the other jobs. Today, when you call him back and rescind the offer, he's stuck. His other job offers are no longer available. You've caused him a loss. So the halacha is, and this is the halacha in Siman Shin Lamed Gimel and Choshen Mishpat, that if you cause a worker a loss, although there was no contract, although it was nothing more than a verbal offer, you're going to be liable for that loss. So, going back to Yossi had offered this plumber a job. Presuming there was another offer on the table that this plumber walked away from, by Yossi rescinding this offer, he's causing a hefsid, he's causing a loss, and al pidin it would seem he's going to be liable, he's going to have to make this plumber whole and reimburse him for any loss. We'll get back to this halacha a little bit later. There's going to be another angle that we'll have to discuss, but for now that's what seems to be the halacha. If the other plumber had no other job, then there's no chi of mamon. It's a question of mechusar amana. Mechusar amana, if there's a good justification, he'd be able to back out. If he caused a loss, it would seem he'd be liable to pay. Now again, while we're discussing Yossi the plumber, this is a very common shaila. In Lakewood, the most common scenario that I get asked about is, there are a lot of playgroups there, and babysitters. What happens if you reserve a slot for your child, and then you change your mind? So what happened? You reserved the slot. This babysitter was only going to take 6 children. Once she filled up, they turned away other people. Now you're waking up the day before the school year starts and backing out. You've caused a hefsid, you've caused a loss. You're going to be liable to pay. Now, this is all concerning Yossi's new employee. What happened afterwards is, after losing this big client, and as business conditions continue to deteriorate, Yossi realized he's going to have to let one of his 2 workers go. This already is a different shaila. This is not a worker who you simply had a verbal promise that you're going to hire. This is someone who's been working for you for years. What are the responsibilities of an employer? When does he have the right to fire an employee? Under what conditions and when does he have to keep him? So there are a number of different parameters to this halacha. If when you hire the person, many contracts today say it's an employment at will. The contract says clearly, I can fire you whenever you want, and the contract says clearly, he can resign whenever he wants. If that's written in the contract, it's a davar sheva mamon, it's a contractual relationship, whatever it says in the contract is going to govern. And if you have the right, if there's a clause saying you can fire him at will, you can fire him at will. The shailas come up, what happens when there is no such clause? Or there's no formal written contract? What are the rights of the employer and what are the rights of the employee? So the halacha is as follows. Say you hire someone for a year. You hire a teacher. You don't hire a teacher for a week or a day. You hire them for the school year. Once they begin working, the first day of school, or even perhaps when they show up, when they come to the job, their hiskul b'malacha, that is the equivalent of a kinyan. And once that happens, once they've begun the job, both parties are locked in until the end of the term. So if you hire them for a year, once they begin, you're locked in. You can't fire them until the end of the year. The worker always, again, the halachas are different. A worker, b'derech klal, has the right to walk away whenever he chooses. We're not going to go into the parameters of that halacha. But as far as the employer is concerned, if you hire someone for a year, he's locked in until the end of the year. Now what happens if you hire someone and you don't make up a term? You hire him stan. You tell him I'm going to pay you X amount of dollars per month, and you don't say when the ending date is. So how long are you locked in? So there's an interesting machlokes. The Igros Moshe has a shita. This may come as a bit of a shock, but the Igros Moshe writes, if you hire someone and you don't make up a term, he's employed for life. People here, employers or employees, can usually tell by the laughter. That is Ramosha's shita. Now, many of the contemporary poskim disagreed. The Chazon Ish, Dibri Malkiel, both write that it's not mistavra that the parties mean to get married, to be bound in forever. And what they write is, we look at the pay period. If you're paying the person monthly, then each month is a new job. Once he starts that month, you've got to keep him until the end of the month, or at least you've got to pay him until the end of the month, but you have no responsibilities past the end of the pay period. If he's paid weekly, each week is a new is looked at as a separate job. Yeah, if you hire him by the hour, then yes. Now the Chazon Ish brings up a number of possibilities. He said it could be there is a minimum. He says perhaps 30 days is a minimum. Then the Chazon Ish suggests that if there are laws, the laws may create a minhag. And again, you'll have to examine the minhag, you'll have to examine the norm, because in the absence of any agreement, you'll assume that the party's meant to do whatever's typical, whatever's normal. But anyway, that is the shita of the Chazon Ish and the Dibri Malkiel. You're not locked in for life. You're locked in for as long as that pay period. And I believe most Batei Dinim follow the psak of the Chazon Ish as opposed to the psak of the Igros Moshe in this particular issue. So now let's get back to Yossi. Yossi's plumber, for argument's sake, was hired, had a yearly contract. So it would seem Yossi's stuck. If you rent a house for a year, and then suddenly you decide you don't like the neighborhood, can you move out in the middle? No. You've got a contract for a year, you're bound for the year. And therefore it would seem for the worker as well. You have a contract for a year, you're stuck paying the worker until the end of the year. However, in Siman Shin Lamed Daled, the Shulchan Aruch discusses a fascinating halacha. A person hired workers to plow his field. They arrived the next morning, and when they showed up to work, they realized, this is in New Orleans, the field was underwater. It was flooded. They couldn't plow.
So, the field owner, the employer said, I'm very sorry, I hired you to plow the field, but it can't be done. You can't plow, I'm not going to pay you. The worker said, nothing doing. You hired us to plow, we're here, we're ready to plow. You've got a problem. You don't have a field that's ready to be plowed. That's not our problem, that's your problem. What's the halacha? Who suffers the loss? So the Gemara makes the following distinction. It depends on who had knowledge of this flood. If the case was, the owner knew, he lived in New Orleans for years, every day on his way to work he passed by these levees and he saw they were flooding and leaky, and he knew all it's going to take is one big hurricane and his field is underwater. If he knew that, and the worker was some fellow from Texas, he had never been to New Orleans before, he had no idea of the situation, then the halacha is, it's going to be the employer's loss. He was aware of the risk, the worker wasn't aware of the risk, so if the employer didn't tell him, listen, I'm hiring you, but you should know if there's a heavy rainstorm, that's it, the job's over, the employer's going to be responsible. However, let's say both parties had equal knowledge. Either both parties knew about the risk, or neither party knew about the risk. Then the halacha is, the worker will lose, and you don't have to pay him. So, you hire someone to service an account. And this account is the Beer Stearns account. Suddenly, out of the blue, you wake up one day, and Beer Stearns is no longer. So we'll have to look. If the owner of the firm and the worker, neither of them had any idea what was going on, like most Americans, then it's going to be the worker's loss. However, if the owner of the firm had some friends in the treasury, and he knew that Beer Stearns was on the ropes, and either would or wouldn't make it, and nevertheless, he hired an employee and said, I'm hiring you to service the account, and didn't warn him about the risk, then it's going to be the employer's loss, not the worker's loss. So, going back to Yossi the plumber, it depends how much of a shock this bankruptcy was. If he knew all along this client was shaky, and nevertheless he hired a worker without and didn't warn him, then the loss will be his. And even if he wants to fire a worker, he's going to be responsible to pay him until the end of the year. However, if this came as a shock to both parties, it's an oinus, it's not something that they could have anticipated, or in the opposite case, if both of them knew this client was at risk, and the worker understood good and well that this job may or may not work out, then the halacha is the employer is going to be off the hook. Okay, a bad worker, a worker that's pesheya, the halacha is in Simen Shinvav, Sifches, you're allowed to fire him. However, there are very strict guidelines and the definition of a pesheya. It has to be, he has to be negligent three times, you have to warn him, say that there are differences, whether it's an irreparable damage, it's not. There are a lot of different halachas, and it's the kind of thing that when you do fire someone for incompetence, you're going to have a fight on your hands. Because the employer always says the worker is good for nothing, lazy, and doesn't know how to get it done. The employee says, I was a great worker, I put in my life and soul, and I did everything right, just he doesn't like me, and he'll have it entire. But in theory, if he is pesheya, he does it numerous times, you have every right to fire him. So anyway, to summarize, even if you have a binding employment contract, if there's an oinus, if the job is no longer possible to be done, the employer is allowed to fire the worker and will not have to pay. Now, if that's true by a worker that's working for you, it's clearly true by a worker who was just promised a job. And therefore, going back to our situation with Yossi, he had promised someone a job, that person turned down a different offer. If this bankruptcy of the client was unexpected, it was an oinus, Yossi will be off the hook for him as well. Now, Rav Moshe has a fascinating tshuva. He deals with a very difficult problem. Yossi's come to the conclusion one of his two workers has got to go. Who does he fire? And who does he keep? So So Moshe has a long tshuva, it's a beautiful tshuva, and it really depends on the lomdus and what the rights of a worker are. At one point he suggests you go with seniority. Whoever was hired first has first rights to the job. And therefore, if one person's got to go, you fire the most recent employee. But Moshe goes back and forth. At the end of the day, what he says is like this. He says it's a suffix, he doesn't have a clear hachra. What you should do, l'chadchila, is you have a problem. Both of them have the rights to the job. You don't have enough work for both of them. Zakr of Moshe, split it. Offer each of them a part-time job. He actually says you should offer the older worker, you should split it 60-40. The older worker should get 60% of the job, the new worker 40% because of his status in halacha. But he says you should split it. What happens if it's not practical? What happens if it just doesn't work? Neither party wants to split it. So what Rav Moshe suggests, I've never actually seen anyone do this, he says, do a goyd agud. The two workers should sit down, and one of them should buy out the other one. They should say, okay, listen, we each have the rights to half the job. I think this job is worth $10,000 to have a job. So I'll give you $5,000 and you walk, or you give me $5,000 and I'll walk. One person sets the price, the other person chooses which one to do, and that's how you should make the decision. If we're not dealing with a question of negligence, and we're dealing within the time period where there's a kinyan, I don't think that'll make a difference. Not really, because it's negeya. It's more relevant according to Rav Moshe, because essentially, whenever you fire someone, you're going to have this issue. But even if you don't accept that opinion, assuming, let's say you give someone a year contract, within that year you'll have the same issue.
So within the year where you have a right to fire them, in other words, in case where something happened.
Exactly. You'll have the same issue as well. It'll be more relevant according to Rav Moshe.
If one worker has a big family, the other does not have a family.
Not really. And the reason for that over here is that the way the Igros Moshe is looking at it, each worker has the right to this job. There's a contractual responsibility to pay him or to give him the job for the year. When you're dealing with contractual responsibility, you can't start saying, I'm going to renege on this person's contract and not on this person's because he has a bigger family. And that's Eim Rachim and Bedin. We don't have the right to rework contracts just to keep people in their homes. A goyd agud is not exactly a goyd agud. This is, again, it's more effective. A goyd agud is really in hilchos shutzvim. It's really not for today to go through exactly how it's done. But again, it's just a way how to divide it up and how to make this decision. So let's move on. Yossi, we have a lot of ground to cover. I'll be happy to stay afterwards to deal with. No, if you're dealing with contractual responsibility, then it's not a question of comfort. You have an obligation to them. So, moving on with our story, Yossi does his deed. He fires one of the workers. The worker then turns around and asks for severance. He wants severance. He wants a severance package. Why should he be worse for the fellows who messed up Fannie Mae? He's also entitled. What are the halachas? So the Minchas Yitzchak has an interesting tshuva. He was asked about essentially a severance pay. And he writes that in Eretz Yisrael, the custom, the minhag is to give a chodesh l'shana. For every year that a person's employed, when ultimately, or if he's fired, you pay him 1 month for every year of service. If he worked for 12 years and you fire him, you give him 1 year severance. If he worked for 20 years, you give him 20 months severance. Chodesh l'shana. However, the Minchas Yitzchak points out, this is a question of minhag. There's no halacha you have to give a chodesh l'shana. It's the norm in Eretz Yisrael. And since it's the norm, whenever you hire someone, we're going to assume the agreement is consistent with the minhag, consistent with the normal custom. However, outside of Eretz Yisrael, the Minchas Yitzchak writes, I don't know.
You have to go each place whenever the issue arises, you have to see. If there's a universal custom to give severance, you've got to give it. If there's no universal custom, even though some people do and some people don't, then there's no chiyuv mikar hadin. Is that for all jobs or just for yeshivas? Okay, because that there probably is a minhag. I think most Bate Dinim will honor Chodesh Hashanah when you're dealing with a yeshiva, when you're dealing with a Klei Kodesh. But for an accountant, I'm not aware of any such minhag. Again, it's not so much a question of a psak halacha. It's subject to change. It's not a din, it's a minhag. It's, and if the norms change, the halacha will change as well. In many, although unfortunately not too many yeshivas have pension plans. Right. However, the Minchas Yitzvah adds a very important point. Although you can't obligate someone to give severance, there's no halacha, unless in the absence of a clear minhag, we find by an Eved Ivri, a Jewish slave, so you buy a slave, and after 6 years or whatever it is, Shemitah, he goes out free. The halacha is, when you send him away, you can't send him away empty-handed. There's a mitzvah of hanukkah. And although you owe him nothing, although you've already paid him when you purchased him, okay, although you don't have any monetary obligation to him, there's a mitzvah of hanukkah, there's a mitzvah that he worked for you, he served you faithfully for all these years, don't send him away empty-handed. The Chinuch in Mitzvah Tav Pei Beis says that although the technical mitzvah is only by an Eved Ivri, that's what the Torah is talking about, that's the mitzvah. But mitzvahs are not there just to teach us technical halachas. We're supposed to learn from the hashkafa of the mitzvahs. And what the mitzvah of Hanukkah is teaching us is that if a person served us well for many years, if we've seen bracha, if we've been successful on the back of someone, then we should have a karas atoyiv, and we shouldn't send him away empty-handed. And therefore, the Minchas Yitzchak writes, as in Midas Chasidus, as in the Thnimishurus Adin, it's appropriate to give some sort of severance package. Now, because it's not a chiyuv, because it's a Midas Chasidus, it will depend on the circumstances, it will clearly depend on what they can afford. If Yossi the plumber is very strapped, and if he starts giving severance packages, he's not going to be able to make a payroll. Clearly, that's not the appropriate thing to do. But in a normal circumstances, if you're not quite as tight as our Yossi, the right thing to do is to give some sort of severance package. Time goes on. The economy continues to deteriorate. It's the end of the month, and Yossi realizes he's got a bunch of bills to pay. He's got vendors, he's got a mortgage to pay, utilities, and he's got payroll. He's got this last remaining employee. He looks at his bank account and he sees there's not enough to go around. So now he's faced with a dilemma. Who gets paid first? How do you decide who gets paid, in full, and who gets put to the bottom of the line, and who gets paid later? So halacha is as follows. Whenever you borrow money, whenever you buy an item, you have a responsibility to pay. Not only do you have a chiyuv to pay, you have a responsibility to pay on time. There's a lav midivrei Kabbalah, al toimer l'reich aleich v'shoyiv l'mocher etein. Whenever you delay, you push off any creditor, unless you have a very good reason for doing so, you're violating this law of Midivrei Kabbalah. When you're dealing with workers, there's another completely different set of halachas. There's a mitzvah asay b'yoyim ha'itite in schara. Every time you pay a worker on time, you're being a makayim a mitzvah asay. Not only is there a mitzvah asay, if you delay, if you don't pay a worker at the time that it's owed, the day that he finished the job, you're violating a law. Baltalin, Lesavil Lev Hashemesh, depending on the circumstances, there's a law. So let's go back to our question. We've got a vendor with a bill, and we've got payroll to meet. Clearly I have a chiv to pay both of them. If I have the money and I choose not to pay one of them, I'm clearly being over a lav, either deraisa or derabbanan. But over here, I don't have the money for both. I have the money for one. So which one should I choose? You choose the lesser of two evils. So triage. If I pay the vendor, then I'm violating, I'm losing out the mitzvah of biyomei titin schari, the opportunity to pay the worker, and I'm violating the lav of baltelin. By she'en kein, if I choose to pay the worker, I mean mekayim mitzvah saseh, and I'm not violating any isurim as far as the vendor, at least not, clean out any isurim deraisa, and for technical reasons you won't even violate al toim of the reicha. Therefore the halacha is, if you have a choice between who to pay, workers come first. Now this can lead us, Yossi, to very difficult, serious problems. If he pays the bank, and he tells his employees, you know what, I'll pay you on Tuesday, they'll probably show up to work the next week. They don't have much of a choice. If he pays his workers, the bank, the utilities, are not going to be quite as understanding. They may foreclose. What's the halacha there? Now if you think about it, let me ask you this, really the same shaila in a little bit of a different scenario. Let's say you're faced with a challenge, and the bank is going to foreclose on the house. The only way to stop the foreclosure is if you eat a cheeseburger. What's the halacha? Halacha is cheeseburger. You can't. The halacha is you can't violate a law simply to save yourself some money. So no matter how significant the loss, you don't have the right to violate a law. Now let's go back to Yossi. Not paying a worker, he's violating Baal Talin. Is there any difference between Baal Talin and cheeseburgers? They're both a lav deraisa. So it would seem, al pi halacha, no matter what the loss, what the results will be, your responsibility should be to paying a worker first. If the worker is mevater, if he's moichel, it's fine. This is a bein adam lechaveroi, and therefore, if you go over to the worker, you explain to him the situation, and he's moichel b'leif shalem, not a problem. That's true, but you don't have to lose your house to be kind of a mitzvah kumis. Now, I'm not saying this lahalacha. B'kivegu brings up this point. There's a number of achroinim that discuss it, have different answers. There'll be nafkamina lahalacha. Vimrebina writes that this concept of losing you, of suffering a hefsid for a lav, does not apply to min adam l'chavera. He says, it's not misavr, it's not a darkei noyim to say, so that this employee should get a couple of dollars today instead of tomorrow, someone else should have to lose his whole parnasa. Again, there are different answers. I'm not here to go through the answer. I wanted to bring out the point and bring out the severity of the issue. Time marches on. Unfortunately, the economy continues to deteriorate. And after a couple of months of juggling his bills and his workers and his rent, he starts falling behind on his rental payment. He gets a letter from his landlord. You haven't paid. I want you out. I want to evict you. What are the halachas? What are the rights of a landlord? When can he kick out a tenant? How much notice does he have to give? And what's the procedure? Now, on the surface, this seems to be a halacha discussed in Siman Shin Yud Beis. It discusses the normal notice a tenant and a landlord have to give each other. The case there is you rent an apartment. There's no date on the lease. It's indefinite. It's $1,000 a month without a particular term. So the halacha is, it's based in Baram Bav Metziah, Kavalef, that how much notice you have to give before you leave, and how much notice the landlord has to give before you evict the tenant, depends on where the place is located. If you're in a large city, you have to give 12 months notice. Cities are crowded. It's hard to find a unit. It's also very often hard to find a good tenant. 12 months notice. You live in a little village, 30 days is enough, but the Gemara says you can't throw them out during the winter, it has to be during the summer. the Gemara goes on to make other differences. Businesses have longer, you have a year. Bakeries have 3 years. All sorts of different parameters. Excellent. Those cases are he's paying. And they decide to terminate the relationship. The halacha is, it's a takanos chazal. We have to give a certain amount of notice. This way, the landlord's protected, he can find a replacement. The tenant's protected, he'll be able to find another unit. He won't end up in the streets. Zog the Ma'arit in Simen Kuv Gimel, this is only when he's paying. If someone falls behind on his rent, Ma'arit says, you can evict him immediately. The landlord, the deal is, you pay rent, you stay in the apartment. You can't force the landlord to give you or to continue giving you the use of the apartment if he's not going to get the money as per the agreement. And therefore, according to the Ma'arit, you have the right to evict him immediately. Okay. And I'm going to ask that we wait till the end for questions. We're running out of time, so at the end I'll stay for some questions and answers. So Ma'arit says you have the right to evict him immediately. The Palmoine Zov makes a very interesting point. He says, why are you allowed to evict him? Is this a punishment because he hasn't paid rent? No, it's not a punishment. It's very simple. You can't force the landlord to give you the use of the house if he's not getting paid. So what will be in the following scenario? The person moves in, he's 3 months behind on his rent. You send him a letter, I want you out. He's desperate, he starts scrambling, he goes around. Finally he finds he has a rich uncle who feels bad for him. And the uncle comes to the landlord and says, you know what? I'm going to be an Arif. I'm going to guarantee that going forward you will get every month's rent. The landlord says, that's not good enough. He owes 6 months of back rent. If you want him to stay, I want all the back rent. Zog v'hamoyin ezov, nothing doing. You cannot evict him. Because again, we're not punishing him because he didn't pay. On the money that he owes you, so he owes it to you. As he earns money, you'll be able to collect it from him. The reason why you're allowed to throw him out is the future. We can't force you to give him the use of the house if you're not getting paid. Since you're secure about the future, you have an arev, you have someone who's guaranteeing it in a way that protects your interests, you will not be able to evict him. And again, this halacha, this marit, is brought down by a number of achronim. There is a ritva that Rav Kveger and Simen Shin Mamalv quotes that perhaps argues in certain cases. But as a matter of halacha, this marit is what we follow. Right. Now, Yossi at this point is thoroughly desperate. He's being evicted. He's having trouble paying his bills. He needs cash fast. So he goes over to his employee and tells him, listen, suppliers have stopped shipping us things. We don't have credit. Do me a favor. Charge some of these expenses on your credit card and I'll pay you back. This is a classic Rivas problem. The employee who's using his personal credit card is borrowing money from his bank, from his credit card. He's taking the supplies and essentially selling it to Yossi. If Yossi simply pays in full by the end of the month, that's wonderful. But you and I know that Yossi's not going to do that. You and I know that Yossi's going to be making the minimum payment for the next who knows how many years. And what's happening is, every day that goes by, the credit card company is accruing interest and charging it to his employee. The employee is charging Yossi interest. Although the employee is just, it's a wash, he's not making a penny of profit, the money's getting sent straight to the bank. Still in halacha, we look at this as two separate deals, and the money that the employee, the interest charges, cannot be passed along to Yossi. If he does pass it along, and they realize after the fact, Api halacha, this is Ribbis Kutsutsa, this is Ribbis Doiraisa, and the poor employee is going to have a chiv to pay Yossi all of the interest charges that have accrued throughout the year. It's a tremendous chumrah. When this happens, it causes tremendous hardship on the parties. It's a halacha that it's important that people be aware of before the fact, before they get involved in, they get themselves involved in this kind of mess. Now, time marches on, and Yossi now is really desperate. And in desperation, he's going through some of his old records. He sees that many years earlier, when times were a bit better, he had lent someone money, and he had never gotten paid back. So, picks up the phone and decides he's going to try to collect that money. Now, he has a mortgage note, and the question that comes up is, when a person's owed money, and you want to foreclose, you want to collect the debt, what's the proper procedure? Now, as many people know, there's a law. If you know the borrower has no money, if you know the borrower cannot afford to pay you back, there's an isser of a sila kenosha, you're not allowed to press him, you're not allowed to try to get the money out of him. In a practical sense, this law is usually not that relevant, because it applies only when the borrower doesn't have the money, clearly doesn't have the money. Usually, the lender suspects that the borrower has money. Al pi halacha, he often does. If he has assets, in halacha, the lender very often has the right, there's a concept of misogyny, often has the right to force the borrower to sell assets. If he has that halachic right, he can clearly ask him for the money, he can clearly push him. It's only when the borrower has nothing that al pi halacha is mechuyev to pay, that's where the issur applies. But the issue that comes up more commonly is, do you have to go to Bezdin to collect the debt? Or can you simply sue the person in court to foreclose? Now, under normal circumstances, going to our kohes, suing a yid in secular court, is a tremendous avera chamura. The language of the Mechaber is, he's mechareth, megadef, and hirim yabeter as Moshe, tremendously harsh language. Two Jews fighting in front of a secular court is a tremendous chilul Hashem, and again, it's a tremendous avla. Even if both parties agree, both parties decide they'd rather fight it out in court, the issur still applies. It's not a davar shebamamid, it's not something the parties can waive. They have an obligation, if they need to litigate, to do it in front of a bezdin. When it comes to collecting debt, the Marsham, Chilek Aleph, Simon Peches, says debt is different. He says that there is a choyv borer. If there's an undisputed debt, the borrower agrees, I owe you the money, I have no argument. But he simply refuses to pay. The Marsham says, al pi din, you're not mechuyev to go to Bezdin first. He says that in Midas Chasidus, it's appropriate to go to Bezdin anyway, tell them what you're doing, but technically al pi din, you have the right to go to secular court. Marash Engel takes issue with this psak. And he says as follows. It's clear from the Marsham that he's talking about only a case where it's an undisputed debt. Everyone agrees the money is owed, he's simply refusing to pay. If there's any sichsuch, if there's any tayin v'nitan, if there's any dispute, any real litigation, everyone agrees you've got to go to Bezdin. So the Marash Engel, so it's an undisputed debt. So you definitely are owed the money. But now we're dealing with the question of collection. How do you collect the money? Let's say the gentleman says, you know what, I need 30 days. And then I'll pay you. I'll put the money together. In halacha, we'll typically give it to him. A secular court, who knows? Let's say he has nothing to pay. And you've got to seize his assets. What assets do you seize? When you seize it, how do you value these assets? How do you sell them? There are all sorts of halachas. These halachas, a secular court can't deal with. These halachas need a bezdin. And therefore, Zokta Marash Engel, even if we're going to concede to the Marsham's halacha in theory, that when there's nothing to litigate, you can go straight to court, in a practical sense, it will be very rare to find a case where it applies. Because typically there'll be some sort of back and forth, there'll be some sort of issues about how much time to give him, and therefore you'll have an achrayus responsibility to go to Bezdin. Now, as far as a practical matter, if the borrower clearly owes the money, he's not disputing it, He has the ability to pay you, or he has properties that he doesn't live in that are mortgaged to it, and it's a question of seizing it. Bihalacha, you probably do have the right to go to secular court. What I recommend that people do is to be yotzei yidei shneihem. If for some reason you're afraid, you feel that going to Bezin will drag out the process, will cause a loss, do them both at the same time. When you send your lawyer letter ready to sue him, ready to foreclose, write in the letter you're willing to go to Bezin, and at the same time send a hazmano, send a summons from a Bezin. And that way you'll be protected in manushach. If the person ignores the Bezin, ignores the hazmano, then you have every right to go to court, and the Bezin itself will give you a heter arkois, will give you permission to pursue in court. If, on the other hand, the person responds, he has issues, he doesn't think he owes you the full amount, or he feels this is a reasonable payment plan, etc., then he'll respond, he'll come to Bezdin, you'll deal with it there. But again, this way, you can move forward with both processes simultaneously, and if he does choose to go to Bezdin, if there are issues that arise, the Bezdin that's sending the hazmonos will be in a position to deal with it, to address the questions, and deal with it as they see appropriate. Just again, in a practical manner, very often when you're dealing with foreclosures, especially today, you'll get much quicker service in a Bezdin. Anyone who's involved in the legal system knows that today, especially in New Jersey, the system is totally gummed up with the tremendous amount of foreclosures they're dealing with. And it's a process that takes time and there's an expense involved. When the issue goes to Bezdin, if the parties are agreeable and he shows up to Bezdin, it's relatively quick, inexpensive, and very often the results are much more positive for all parties involved. So it's certainly recommended, again, if you feel the need to start the process, you can do them both at the same time, but certainly recommended to send a hazmana from a Bezdin. Time marches on. The economy continues heading south. Sorry for being such a pessimist, gentlemen, but that was the topic that I was given. Mr. Hashem, next time I'll come, I'll talk about it. Halacha shalos for a booming economy. Yossi's house goes to foreclosure. It's seized by the bank, and it's sold. The value of the property, for argument's sake, was, in Yossi's opinion, was $500,000. It sold for $300,000. The buyer is Jewish. Yossi goes over to the buyer and says, I have a problem over here. This house is worth $500,000. The bank sold it for $300,000. I don't think they had the right to do that. They're stealing $200,000 from me. And since you're Jewish, I want you to come to Bezdin. I believe I'm entitled to the house. Now, interestingly enough, there are two tshuvas that discuss similar scenarios. There's a Beis Ephraim and Siman Nun Ches, there's a Divrei Chaim. And they deal with various interesting points, some of which are sound suspiciously familiar to today's foreclosure environment. Divrei Chaim deal addresses this first point, the fact that the house was sold for $300,000, even though it's worth $500,000. The owner came with a few claims. He said, first of all, that's stealing. Normally, if I owe someone money, he wants to collect my assets. If I owe him $300,000, he can collect $300,000 worth of assets. He can't seize $500,000 of mine and sell it at a fire sale. So that was his first claim. The second claim, he said, is why do you think it was sold for $300,000? Actually, his case, the numbers were more extreme. It was $500,000, it was sold for $50,000. Why was it sold for $50,000? Because when everyone shows up to the auction, Yossi, it was a partner over here, the partner went around to all the Jews and said, listen, this house was mine. Stay away. And all the Jews walked away. They didn't want to compete, they didn't want to bid it up, they wanted the original owner to keep, they walked away. He went over to all the Goyim and said, oh, you're bidding on that house? Toxic waste in the basement. Lo and behold, it went for $50,000. So Yossi afterwards says, this whole sale was collusion, it was illegal, I want to be mevatel the sale, I want you to give me the property. So Divrei Chaim starts off by saying, first of all, I want you to know, and again, this is true back then, don't draw any legal conclusions, he says, collusion at auctions is okay. He says, it's okay. He says, I checked it out, because it's very simple.
The bank has a choice. They can either sell it or they can pull it off the market. The buyers get together, they have a union. If workers can have unions, buyers can have unions. And this is the offer they're willing to give. The bank doesn't like it, they don't have to take it. That's not collusion, that's not illegal. He says, they make these deals right in front of the judge, under his nose, he doesn't say anything, it's not a problem. Even if collusion is illegal, he says, protecting another yid's house, you call that collusion? Everyone knows that Jews take care of each other, and if there's a Jew living there, people are not going to want to bid it up. He says, that's not collusion, that will not be brought to the mecher. Then he deals with another issue. There's a concept of ani mahapi b'charara, that if a person is negotiating on a deal, another person is not supposed to come in and swoop in and steal that deal away. That halacha has many limitations. It applies only when there's a final agreement. I have an agreement with one person, someone else shouldn't come and interfere. It applies, according to some poskim, only when the thing is being sold for its regular price. If it's a steal of the deal, perhaps there's no ani mahapi b'charara. Zok the Beis Ephraim, in this case, when a person's property goes up for auction, if he's interested in buying it, Beis Ephraim says he has a din of an ani mahapi b'charara. And although he never reached an agreement with the bank, although the deal is a steal, still, since he lived in it before, another person should not interfere with it. And therefore, if the person who lives in the house, who owns the house, is trying to get it, is trying to negotiate with a bank, Beis Ephraim says it's usur for any other yid to come in and to try to get the deal. Zok the Beis Ephraim, even if you're going to disagree with this chiddush, there's another halacha. If a person loses something, loses it in Midtown Manhattan, what's the halacha? There's an aveda, there's yish, finders, keepers. Whoever finds it can keep it, because it's especially if it doesn't have a simen, or if it's in a place where it probably won't be returned. There's halacha in simen reish nun tes, that even after yish, if someone loses something and gives up, although in halacha the finder can keep it, there's a midas chasidus, you should return it anyway. And it says that was a takana, that is the minhag. Zok the Beis Ephraim, if a person owns a house and he loses it through a foreclosure, he says that you have this midas chasidus and maisim b'chol yoyim, whoever buys it has to offer it back to the original owner at the price that he paid. He can ask, he can be reimbursed for his time perhaps, but that's it. He says you have the same midas chasidus, just like if you lose something, it has to be returned to the owner. Someone who loses it through a foreclosure, through an auction, has the same rights as well. Okay, we're out of time, so I'd like to end with a brief thought, and then if anyone has questions, I'll be happy to field some questions. People, when the economy turns, and people's parnassa becomes tighter, it's a tragedy. People have a very hard time dealing with it. Part of it is simply because of the facts. It's difficult to live to make do with less. It's difficult to adapt and to lower your standard of living. But a lot of the pain and the suffering comes from the shock. People have a tendency. When times are booming, they seem to think it's going to be like that forever. And they think things will always be easy, things will always be great. And then when there's sudden change, they're shocked. And they go to the other extreme. They think things will always be horrible, things will never pick up, I'm going to end up sounding like poor old Yossi. And he gets depressed. The reality is, I'm not that old, but you see, there are economic cycles. Things go up, things go down. That's the teva of the Bria. It's not just the teva of the Bria. Think about, we just ended Shemitah. Think about how the Torah wants a farmer in Eretz Yisrael to live. For 6 years he has a job, he's planting, he's plowing, and things are hopefully stable. There's water, he has a pretty stable and normal standard of living. But every person in Eretz Yisrael knows that comes Shemitah, comes every 7 years, suddenly there's going to be a crash. Suddenly the fields are going to lay fallow, for suddenly they're going to be unemployed. They're going to spend their day, they'll go back to yeshiva, learn a little bit, spend time with their family, have time to be oisik and chesed in other mitzvahs, and that's built into their way of life.
that's built into their thinking. And having that built in gives the person the right perspective. The Torah wants to make sure that a person can't get too caught up with their livelihood. The Torah wants to make sure that every once in a while you take a step back, a step away, and you refocus on what's important to you, what your priorities in life are. So I think if a person takes that hashkafa and realizes that this is fakert, the Ratzon Hashem, and just like Ashirus has its nisyonos and has its challenges, so the opposite as well. When things are tough, it has a different, a unique set of challenges. But it's all that. It's all challenges, it's all nisyonos, and all opportunities for a person to grow in different ways in his avodas Hashem. Yei Ratzon Shelo Bizeicha to Parnasa Berevach and Shecha Bracha, and not have the sad, sorry fate of Yossi the plumber. Thank you.